Find out what the Sonoran Desert Toad has to do with an ambient musician from Bloomington Normal. It's Bufo Alvarius from Stephen Hollinger. And hear a preview of the upcoming Sugar Creek Arts Festival. Those stories just ahead on WGLT's Sound Ideas. The Salvation Army Homeless Shelter in Bloomington gets ready for the winter season, and this year that may include people evicted.
I mean, we've already started to see more calls starting to come, so I think once that gets lifted, I certainly think the need will increase.
Oh, there's a staff shortage at the shelter, too. And some people in Bloomington Normal get out of prison but still feel they are looking at the rest of the community from behind bars, unable to participate. Hear about the Fully Free movement to remove barriers to reentry. Those stories and a Bloomington Normal news update just ahead. This is WGLT's news magazine, Sound Ideas, on 89.1 FM and WGLT.org. This is Sound Ideas. I'm Charlie Schlenker. A prison after the prison. That's how some formerly incarcerated people describe trying to re-enter society after serving their time. The Fully Free campaign is working to dismantle laws in Illinois they say create barriers to re-entry. In this conversation with Sarah Nardi, advocates Marlon Chamberlain, Toy Beasley, and Ann Thomas discuss the difficulties people face in Bloomington Normal after they've served their time. Chamberlain explains why an organized effort to help is needed.
Every year, thousands of people are released from incarceration, or there are people who have arrest and conviction records that are basically told to rebuild their lives. And in most cases, these individuals are going back to underserved or resource communities that already lack the resources. And then on top of that, there are hundreds of laws that really complicate things and restrict people from certain opportunities. And so I would say these laws intentionally deny us opportunities, and they create this prison after the prison.
And so what kind of barriers are people facing once they are released from prison and they, you know, attempt to reenter society?
The majority of permanent punishments that we've seen thus far are around basically three categories: employment, housing, and education, which we all know those are like essential things that people need after incarceration. You need a place to live, you need a job, and if you want to go back to school, you definitely should pursue an education. And just to even be more, even more specific, this last April, my son, who was a first grader at the time, had a school field trip to a bowling alley. And his teachers asked me to chaperone because they see how engaged I am in my son's education. And so I was denied an opportunity because of a 20-year-old conviction from being a chaperone. So imagine being on a yellow bus with my son and being in the bowling alley with the little garden rails and helping him bowl. Like, he was denied this opportunity because of an old 20-year conviction that I've served my time for and have been home now for 10 years.
And Toy, you're working here in McLean County to help formerly incarcerated people connect with the resources they need to make a successful reentry. But you say it's also really important to help the community understand what kind of difficulties come along with having something on your record, even after you've served your time.
That's one of the things we want to push this campaign to educate the community on these people that got caught up. This is something in the past. And that if we can educate them on what we need to do to move forward, maybe that'll help the people coming behind us, you know? And so me being formerly incarcerated over 21 years ago, 22 years ago, that's why I'm out here. I want to be the voice for the voiceless. And there's a lot of individuals that in a McLean County community that don't have a voice.
That's right.
Reentry don't exist here in McLean County. It's not talked about. People avoid it. They want to push it under the rug, but it needs to be not pushed under the rug. It needs to be open. It needs to be talked about. We need to bring people to the table to have conversations for individuals that are going through life struggles.
Part of the problem is unemployment, not being able to find a job when you're released from prison because of your criminal record. But it sounds like there's also a big problem with underemployment, not being able to get a good job that you're qualified for, because someone doesn't want to hire you. And Anne, this sounds like something that you've dealt with. And I wonder if you think that employers should be taking a harder look at their policies when it comes to hiring.
Most definitely. I worked for an agency at one time and I loved what I did, but I couldn't keep affording to do that position because I was working a full-time job plus two part-time jobs. I was putting my daughter through college. I mean, I'm 53 years old now. My body can't take that. The things that's still on my background, I'm still not able to get the type of work that I want to do that I've been doing for 20 plus years. I can't get in there because of what's still on my background that cannot be sealed or expunged. I am not who I used to be. I'm a completely different person now. I've learned from my mistakes. I'm not saying that I want you to give me something. I will work very hard for any company that trusts and put their trust in me.
Those were members of the Fully Free campaign, speaking with Sarah Nardi. Fully Free is hosting an upcoming event in support of those impacted by incarceration. People will have the opportunity to share stories and connect with resources to aid in reentry. That takes place Saturday from 12 to 3 at the Family Community Resource Center in Bloomington. This is Sound Ideas. I'm Charlie Schlenker. In less than a month, the temperatures will begin consistently falling below freezing overnight. The Salvation Army in Bloomington will open its warming center when that happens, so people without homes are not at risk. Development Director Angie Boobin says the center and the Safe Harbor overnight shelter will again have a cap on people because of COVID. Boobin says the Salvation Army is refreshing its plans to find places for people to go if the agency doesn't have space.
It's going to be another year of making it work and making sure everyone stays safe, but we collaborate really well with other agencies in town, and we were able to do that successfully last winter, and we anticipate it'll be the same this winter.
Are you anticipating bigger needs for shelter this fall?
I think it's stayed pretty steady. Obviously, we're keeping an eye on if the eviction memorandum is lifted, what that looks like for all of our programs, not just the shelter, but our financial assistance program, our food pantries. I mean, it's all going to impact. But again, we'll just continue to assess the needs in the community and address those needs and help as many people as possible. Also trying to keep everybody safe as we continue to navigate this new normal of COVID.
Do you have a good sense of what numbers might come through the eviction system?
We think the need will go up. Unfortunately, our budget line hasn't gone up for what funds we have available through our emergency financial assistance program. That's another one. We collaborate very closely with other agencies in this community. So there are different resources, not just Salvation Army. There's other places that we can refer them to help. I mean, we've already started to see more calls starting to come. So I think once that gets lifted, I certainly think the need will increase. We just don't think we have a sense of the number that will increase at this time.
Are these calls anticipatory or are they, we need it now, we need help now?
I think they're anticipatory. I think it's people who know that they're in that situation, and I think it's kind of people who are concerned once this is lifted that there'll be a struggle and they want to get ahead of it.
What does emergency assistance look like? Funding for a hotel room or temporary housing for a night or two in a non-hotel room setting or what?
So it can be a rent payment. Usually there's parameters on how, I think it's every few years that you can request it. It's not just a handout. You meet with the case manager, you talk about the situation. What we try to avoid is if you are concerned about your rent payment this month, do you have a plan in place to pay it the next month? We don't want to pay a rent payment and then the person be in the same situation the next month. So it's basically trying to learn what's going on in the home and how we can maybe help to keep someone, you know, to keep them out of the homelessness situation, but also making sure that they're addressing those more long-term needs so that it's not a continuous situation. A lot of times that program, people are calling to that, and we're actually getting them involved in our other programs like our, you know, our Pathway of Hope or our food pantry if they need food too. Is that would help, you know, lighten the burden a little bit too. So so the program, you can request rent assistance, utility assistance. Sometimes there's transportation assistance if someone needs, you know, a gas card or a bus token or whatever it might be. So there's a number of different things that people can use that program for.
Many sectors of the economy and many municipalities have seen workforce shortages. Have you?
We're seeing a little bit of that at the shelter and just trying to find when a vacancy does open, finding qualified applicants. It does take a lot of people to keep that shelter operational. And I know there has been a little bit of struggle just as vacancies occur to get them filled quickly. Our social service director and our case managers are all stepping in to kind of fill those gaps and make it work.
How many people do you have and how many do you need?
I know total our agency has about 22 employees. I want to say maybe 10 to 12 of those are shelter. I think last I heard there were maybe three vacancies at the shelter, three or four. Some of those are overnight, part-time. But when something like that is open, that just means somebody else has to then fill in those hours. It definitely gets a little tricky, but those are vacancies if anyone is looking. I mean, it's important work. It's work that's going to make you really feel good about what you're doing and helping the community here. So if someone is interested, that I believe there's still those openings available.
So you're understaffed by a third?
At the shelter, approximately.
What does that mean for overtime?
They get really creative. And just that they are able, they, you know, flex some hours if someone does work a different shift or has to work. We try and manage that. But certainly filling those positions would be helpful.
Bloomington Salvation Army Development Director Angie Boobin says they're not considering service cuts because of the staff shortages at this time. This is Sound Ideas. I'm Charlie Schlenker. The Sugar Creek Arts Festival has been a summer staple in Uptown Normal since 1984. That is, until the pandemic forced the annual Art Fair and Street Fest online last year. The live version returns October 9th and 10th, moving to sweater weather for the first time after decades in sweltering July heat. Speaking with arts correspondent Lauren Warnicki, McLean County Arts Center Executive Director Doug Johnson says the change of dates is not the only difference.
Actually, this year I'll say we have about 100 artists as opposed to 130 because we've made accommodation for uptown restaurants that have outdoor seating. Thanks to the apocalypse. What we have is artists that are a little more spread out than they have been in the past. We want to give as much room as possible for everyone. I look at all the different categories of artists that we have. So, you know, fiber, photography, ceramics, painting, jewelry. And we diversify each region because if you're a photographer, you don't want to be near another photographer. If you're a jeweler, you don't want to be bumping elbows with another jeweler. And so we try to give a whole diverse experience throughout the whole festival.
About that apocalypse thing that you mentioned, I know that you did a truncated, smaller festival digital last year. I kind of wanted to check in and see how that went, and if there's any carryover other than the slightly reduced number of artists this year.
Well, we will continue to have an online presence for the festival. It gives those artists a marketplace after the event. A lot of the artists are age 50 and above, we'll say, and some of them didn't have the technical expertise in order to do that. And so we're saying, if you have an iPhone, shoot a video, send it to us. We will add graphics to it, edit it down and all that stuff, which was an exhaustive process. But the problem, of course, is there is an anima to good artwork. You know, there is a life that you cannot really gather from looking at something online. Frankly, one of the big pivot points for a festival like this is that you get to actually meet the artist and get a sense of who they are and carry some of that with you. And again, online is terrific, but it doesn't carry the same kind of emotional context for the work.
I think that's a really good point. Sometimes we attach ourselves as consumers to the artist as much as the work itself, right?
Exactly so. And a lot of artists have a terrific body of work that you can best understand when you're placing it within the context of their larger body of work and other artwork. And so, you know, being on site is a fantastic way to get the things that are real about that.
In addition to this being a fundraiser for the McLean County Arts Center, I imagine for a lot of artists, it's one of the first times since the pandemic began that they're really getting out in front of patrons and consumers again. So because you both operate an art center and also are an artist yourself, I wanted to understand the balance of what you kind of estimate to be the total impact of this thing.
Well, for the artists, it allows them them to pay their mortgage and eat. I think there is a misunderstanding necessarily that this is a weekend activity for these artists, but these are real working artists. These are people that have, you know, staked their lives and their livelihood on making art. And for us, last year was heartbreaking, quite honestly, when we'd see people that we've established long-term relationships with, and they have made sometimes excellent livings working in this marketplace. And it's a gypsy lifestyle. I mean, they're working, making work all winter, and then they're on the road, some of them for months. And when that was cut out from underneath them, we saw a lot of artists, people that we respect and admire, who had to really reconsider what their economic model was, because they couldn't sustain themselves if they weren't selling their work. Again, the online piece is lovely, but it's not sufficient. So for us, it's wonderful to be able to see them back. Not all of them have survived the breakdown, but many, many of them have. So we're excited to see our friends again and more excited to help support them in their continued role as artists.
That was Doug Johnson, Executive Director of the McLean County Arts Center. I'm Lauren Warnicki.
The Sugar Creek Arts Festival takes place October 9th and 10th from 10 to 4 in Uptown Normal. Live music and food trucks will be available throughout the festival. This is Sound Ideas. I'm Charlie Schlenker. Swim Ignorant Fire is the name Stephen Hollinger uses for the music he creates that generally lives in the ambient realm. But the Bloomington Normal native says his latest project with collaborator Ian Sheridan is a left turn. Hollinger says it blossomed during the pandemic with his SP202 sampler after picking up four specific records at Reverberation Vinyl. He tells WGLT's John Norton the album Bufo Alvarius was named after the psychedelic properties of the Sonoran desert toad, and the name Swim Ignorant Fire is a nod to his grandfather, who was a pastor.
I got to kind of see him kind of age, you know, in this modern world, and to a certain extent, I started to kind of akin and think about him more often as I was kind of creating this music. And to me, he was kind of a pillar of salt for me, kind of like the last really good guy. The older he got and as health kind of degraded, Swimming in Fire kind of created more of a metaphor for him as far as, you know, what men will do with their faith and what they're willing to do. It was somewhat admirable to see this man kind of live true to something that he held dear.
Your previous music, for the most part, is ambient music.
Absolutely.
Not a whole lot of percussion going on those albums. Boy, and percussion is all about this album, African rhythms especially.
I've been really obsessed with African music, West African music, the rhythms, the guitar playing. It's been definitely an obsession over the last 5-6 years for me. I was always wanting to do something in this style. Without having a full band, the next thing that I could attempt was pulling out one of my very old samplers, the Roland SP-202. It's kind of notorious for 12-bitting, kind of bit-crushing things, making things sound a lot more older. I was kind of adamant on somehow pulling these things together and seeing what happened. And so what the core bones of this project or some of these songs are, excerpts from numerous improv sessions over the pandemic with me pulling samples. Improv has always been kind of the spirit with a lot of this, and so I always like to get started or generate new ideas with those kinds of approaches. So that's generally how I got the first 10 songs pulled, was just from these improv sessions and then finally editing it down to under, say, 2 minutes or so with each song.
Twelve songs on this album, are they related to each other? Is it like a story arc?
It is. That's the thing when you're left alone creating unpredictable music. somehow a storyline starts getting in your head. I think the shortest way of explaining it, I kind of turn this into kind of a missionary trip gone wrong. the first six songs were exactly what I was seeking to do, was this extremely lifting, positive, joyous chant work. As I kind of started to get more of a narrative in my head, I wanted things kind of to go a little of a left turn towards the end. And so that kind of got me thinking of the general sense of a missionary trip gone wrong.
Is there any message in that?
Yeah, it's more of, I really wanted to pull a lot of non-Western sounds to bring awareness and attention sonically to some xenophobia and stuff like that that's kind of happening. And also with the history behind some of this music is originally very joyous from independence. There's an odd flow of influence of that. There's actually a story I read in 2018. His name's John Chow. He was a missionary. He was unfortunately trying to contact a tribe he was not wanting to be contacted and was unfortunately murdered in his efforts to convert this tribe. So that kind of got this narrative in my head of a left turn in all these, in some of these efforts.
When you're making an album like this, is it a whole different music muscle that you're exercising, or is it basically the same thing, just a different way?
Oh yeah, the process here was completely different. Most of the ambient things do come from probably an improv loop or guitar idea. It's kind of going to multiple formats. So I'm taking a vinyl rip and now crushing that into an SB202 sampler. So now those vinyl crackles are a little bit more enhanced with the quality now kind of degrading. Putting that now into a Pro Tools session and mixing and layering was definitely a new process for me. And also using that SB202 sampler was strictly my primary instrument. And I wanted to keep my focus on that because I wanted to have the time to explore that toy a little bit more. So originally this was meant to be strictly an SB202 album, but I couldn't help myself, you know, including friends, putting bass guitar on it. So this actually did create more of a collaborative thing that I was looking for. The collaboration was new as well, including more people with my music, which is extremely satisfying and encouraging for me to continue doing that more often.
Bloomington's Stephen Hollinger speaking with WGLT's John Norton about his new project, Bufo Alvarius. You can find Sound Ideas interviews and stories at WGLT.org. You can subscribe to Sound Ideas on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, or NPR One. We'd like to know what you think of Sound Ideas. Comment on our Facebook page, we're WGLT-FM, or follow us on Twitter, we're all at WGLT News. Thanks for choosing Sound Ideas on WGLT, made possible in part by Bloomington Normal Audiology. I'm Charlie Schlenker. This is Bloomington Normal's Public Media.